ebook publishers and marketing services company Just Imagine It, Inc. presents Get Behind Me, Now Stay There, a new fun-filled, informative podcast available on iTunes and right here locally on KSKQ Ashland, Oregon, 89.5 FM. Art and entertainment news and views. Today's podcast is brought to you by the fine folks at Downpour.com, the one stop for all your audio and digital book needs. Join the Downpour Audiobook Club and save up to 50% on digital downloads, exclusive member-only deals and promotions with no commitment, and you can cancel at any time. Only $12.99 per month, that's Downpour.com. On this episode, Wouter Kellerman tells us about his preparation for the Nelson Mandela tribute in South Africa. We hear from the world-famous star in fusion music, Ricky Kej, and the New York Times bestseller Unseen in our audiobook feature right after the news you want to know.
Charlie Stanton.
I'm Maya Seligman.
I'm Sarah Simerson.
I'm Chrissy McIntyre.
And I'm Jerry Renfro. Here's a look at our top stories in the art and entertainment world. You know who's really good at merchandising and taking the most advantage of her own brand is Oprah Winfrey.
Yeah, speaking of her own brand, even her own TV station.
Own
network, yeah.
Oprah Winfrey Network. I mean, that woman knows how to capitalize.
And she's also a pretty good actress.
Yes, she is.
She is a pretty good actress, yeah. And you can go and see her this summer in Lee Daniels' The Butler with Forest Whitaker. And you've probably seen her on basically every talk show. She has been everywhere. I keep seeing interviews with her. She was on The View and she was on, you know, all over the internet. If you look up Oprah, you'll see interviews with her. This was a really, really great movie and about The Butler, which is played by Forest Whitaker, and it looks at America's civil rights struggle through the eyes of Eugene Allen, who served eight presidents from 1952 to 1986, sort of a fictionalized version of it. Although there was the person there, but this is sort of a fictionalized movie of it. What was interesting about this movie is that it came out in the summer. This is sort of one of these movies that they figure is going to be up for an Oscar, and usually those movies are put into an October time slot. But what the producers decided and the Weinstein Company decided was let's move it from October to August when female audiences and African-American audiences are really underserved because they have all of these big
superhero movies
and fantasies. You know, the small movies, they don't really make any debut in the summer. So actually, this movie actually got a lot of attention because of its time, which is great. I think it's really great.
Yeah. The Weinsteins are very, very shrewd when it comes to those kind of decisions.
I mean, its primary competition was Kick-Ass 2, which, I mean, it's just
totally different audiences, probably.
Yeah, and the thing is, maybe if you go see Kick-Ass 2, I mean, I really did like Kick-Ass. I thought it was a great movie. But I want to see The Butler, too. I'd like to see both of them. But it is nice to have an option, because this was the summer of, all of the The world is going to end. You know, every movie was basically
post-apocalyptic. The end. Yeah. Right. The apocalypse is very hot right now.
Yeah, so hot right now.
You know what I found interesting about this, Chrissy, is I am a movie file. I watch a fair amount of movies and I keep up on trailers and what's coming. I did not know Oprah Winfrey was even in that movie.
Oh, really?
I saw several trailers in several locations, and I never saw her once. I knew it was Forrest Whitaker. They focused on him. I kind of gathered what the premise of the movie was, and yet in the trailers that I saw, I never saw her, and I never heard anything either. In fact, I found out
looking at the right trailers.
Yeah, apparently not.
Are you sure, Jerry?
I did see trailers for it, and I did not see – the ones I saw did not have her in it.
Jerry Renfro, in this case, is not,
is
the,
not
guy
in the know.
Know. He's not in the know.
Yes.
You are right about her being on pretty much every news, you know, show available.
Right.
She was on CBS this morning, which I watch religiously before I go to work. And Gail King, who's like, you know, her one of her best friends,
is her best friend.
Yeah. So she came on to talk about The Butler, and she stayed for the whole show. They made her a guest host for the day.
Oh, nice.
Fit right in.
Yeah, she just fit right in.
So. God, I hope. I wonder if she was really nervous. I mean, she has no experience doing that kind of thing.
Kind of weird. Throws right in front of the camera.
Throw somebody into that situation. I mean, geez.
And what show was that, Cyrus?
This morning.
The CBS. Oh, this morning. That's right. That's right.
The news.
Yeah, I like. One of the things I like about mornings during the summer is the concert series. You know, different shows. You know, they do like special setups. I've seen. I saw One Direction perform once. I'm trying to think of who else was just recently, but I really enjoy that about the summer. You know, it's something you don't see during the rest of the year because the weather's nice. You know, especially for those East Coast affiliates and stuff like that.
Well, they're all done in New York City, so I mean,
well, right, exactly.
It's the number one media market.
Yep.
Yeah.
Let's.
I can't imagine being at those concerts, though. I mean, I've seen the setup for the Today Show when you walk around Rockefeller Center, and it's just the stage is not that big. That Rockefeller Center looks big on TV, but it's really not that huge. And all of those people jammed in there, and you don't see anything. I mean, you might hear them, but over the noise of the city, if you're on a cross street, you might not even hear it. It's crazy. It seems tiny when you see it live. Thinking about all these thousands of people jammed onto the street, I get a little claustrophobic, and that idea of being in that pile of people is so, I don't like it. I couldn't do it.
A crush of
people. I don't like it.
What amazes me these days about concerts, too, is how many people are videotaping it with their smartphones. Yeah. So, like, you look up, and there's just tons of phones that you see recording it.
I just saw a video about that, Maya. I'm going to send that to you. It was a really cool video about this woman made. It's like just a 2-minute thing about how we're constantly on our phones. So
I saw that. I saw it. I agree. It was like such an awesome video because it was so funny of showing all the different circumstances where people use their phones.
Right. You go out to dinner with your friends and everybody's on the phone, and then you go to a picnic or the birthday party and you're not watching your cake being brought to you. You're videoing it, and it's really sad.
The guy proposing to his girlfriend for marriage, and then they're holding the phone to document it.
And the funniest part is almost the what do you call it? The ancillary ones, like a guy's proposing to his girlfriend, and there's 8 different people that see what's going on, and they're recording it and they're uploading it. It's like, I don't even know these people, but here's a picture of the dude proposing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's terrible if she says no, like that one at the baseball game recently. It's like, not only did you get rejected, now everybody saw it from like 6 different angles. Oh, hey, let's zoom in. Here's the exact moment his heart is breaking.
Yeah, my friend Ben Abb and his band, SIP, every time I go to one of their shows, I mean, there's at least 5-10 people out there filming it. Yep. He has people from different bands coming out with video cameras. Yep. It's pretty crazy.
I went to a Chris Isaak concert at the Brit, and it was so funny because he said there were people taking pictures and videos, and he said, okay, well, screw the rule they have here about no cameras. You can take all the photos and videos you want because I know you're going to do it anyway.
You're going to do it anyway, exactly. Yeah. I don't know, but how do you fix that, you know?
I don't know. I don't know why there's – I mean, I guess it's your recording, so you own the rights to the recording. But I don't know why that Motley Crue doesn't have any rights to that material.
Well, I mean, they could. They could put down a – they could do a cease and desist, couldn't they? Like, if they come across it, order
YouTube
to
everybody?
Take it down. I know. If you're talking about, like, 20,000 people at a concert and a third of them
when
record
you're,
it.
When you're touring the world, you don't have the time, or the money – to go police everyone that has a smartphone.
Yeah.
You know, and it's going to make it up there anyway. You know, the thing is, you know, they want a good representation of their work. It'd be like, you know, somebody coming in sitting, we're doing a podcast and somebody records the whole thing, you know, and puts it on the air from beginning to end, you know, and it, like, only puts on the crazy parts or the parts that, you know, and we're like, hey, you know what, cut that out. Because
the spoofs.
Yeah. Then it's like, because you're like, hey, we spent a lot of time and effort, you know, we want to put out a good product. and you know, you only get, you know, the,
yeah, yeah. We're building a good product, and sometimes, you know, you have little bad parts, but overall, you put out the good part. And if you only show,
well, maybe Motley Crue or whoever the bands are should put out their own videos on YouTube, and then sort of.
Oh,
discourage...
oh no, they do, but he's just saying that he doesn't about the camera thing.
Yeah,
because I asked him, you know. I just remember his comment about that. I was like, oh, yeah, I saw a video of you guys, and you guys were like, you know, he goes, yeah, you know, he goes, that's a problem. He goes, everybody takes videos and they post them up on YouTube, and you know, he goes, they film their concerts and they put their you know, that's like, you know, the official page for Motley Crue or the official page for Alec Baldwin or whatever,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
We have to all document our experiences because they don't count unless everybody sees it. You know?
Right. Well, that's what's that old saying? Pics or it didn't count. That's a big thing on the internet now. Pics or it didn't count. Yeah, show me a picture or it didn't happen.
Well, two people that probably have to worry about that, Lady Antebellum and Stevie Nicks. Both of them will be singing songs from their catalogs during an episode of the country music program CMT Crossroads, which brings singers and artists from another genre together. Which I guess they used to do on a Donnie and Marie Osmond show, right? A little bit of country and a little bit of rock and roll.
Yeah.
So,
I'm a little bit country. I'm a little bit rock and roll.
Yeah. But this show, CMT Crossroads, premiered in 2002. And some of the other past pairings have included Rascal Flatts and the band Journey. Mm. I wonder if that was with their new singer.
Probably the new one, right?
Right, yeah. Right. Emmylou Harris and Mumford & Sons, Carrie Underwood, and Steven Tyler.
That one worked out really – that's the crazy thing. Sometimes it's like, what? And other times you're just like, why aren't you touring together now?
You know what? And this is crazy. You know, I just want to interject this. We were talking about the YouTube thing. And you're saying the singer from Journey. I wonder if it's a new one, right?
Right.
Well,
that was a YouTube thing.
That was a YouTube guy.
Right. Yeah. It was for YouTube.
Neil Jones saw him on YouTube.
So crazy.
Yeah. So, you know, Lady Antebellum and Stevie Nicks, they're going to be sharing harmonies and stories during the program. Nicks, of course, was a singer in the band Fleetwood Mac and was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1998 with the rest of the group. And has released 7 solo albums. Lady Antebellum, for people who might not be followers of country music, is huge in their genre. They won Best Country Album, the Grammy for Best Country Album, Owned the Night in 2012, and took Record of the Year and Song of the Year at the Grammys in 2011. So these are two huge powerhouses coming together. It's going to be a great program, and we'll all be looking forward to it for sure.
I think it's going to be. I think this is a really good pairing. I'm actually looking forward to it.
I love Stevie Nicks.
Yeah, me
too. I saw her in concert like a billion years ago. But
yeah, where was it at?
It was at the Garden State Arts Center back in the day. It's a great little outdoor place.
In New Jersey or New York?
New Jersey. Yeah. I used to work there, so I got to see all the concerts. I was working in the concession stand, and after it was like after intermission, the concession stand closed, and we got to go see the shows. So it was great. I saw a lot of people there.
Was she dragging her heart around then?
She was. She was. Just like the world wing.
She didn't cause a landslide, did she?
Yeah. No, she didn't do it that. No, that was.
Let me ask you this: was she wearing leather or lace?
She was wearing black, and she had that whole thing going on with the arms doing her dance and everything. It was great. Loved it. Love Stevie Nicks.
I'd love to see Stevie Nicks in a movie. Stuff.
Yes, sorry? I would love to see her in a movie, too.
I'm surprised she hasn't made the jump to the silver screen.
Yeah, why hasn't she done that?
She certainly has the looks for it, and I bet she's a talented actress.
Yeah, and speaking of the silver screen, so the summer might be known as the blockbuster season, but the fall is actually known as the season of prestige films, when studios schedule all of their films that they think have the best chance of winning an Oscar because they're really fresh in judges' minds.
Right.
Yeah, and so historically, the later a film is released in the year, the more a studio believes that the film will perform well at the Oscars. And this year, the fall is looking jam-packed with films backed by considerable talent. And many of the most talented directors and actors have films opening within weeks of each other. And one thing is certain, movie lovers will have a lot of great choices in the coming months. And
yay!
So just to get you started with what's on the horizon, let's look at 4 films that are already getting a lot of buzz.
Yeah, you know what? Let's do that. I saw this list with Maya, and I got to tell you, I'm really excited about this because these movies have not been released yet.
Mm-hmm.
And
let's thing is that they all have trailers that you can watch online. And Jerry, being the movie file, I'm sure has watched them. So one that I thought was interesting is The Monuments Men. And it's a historical drama co-written, produced, and directed by George Clooney. And it stars Matt Damon, Bill Murray, John Goodman, and Kate Blanchett.
She's a great actress.
She is. Mm-hmm. Those are all great.
I'll see anything with Bill Murray.
Yeah, so will I. I'll watch a 30-minute video of Bill Murray, you know, scratching his nose because
I'm
sure it'd be hilarious.
I love his satire.
Yeah.
Well, this film is based off of the book The Monuments Men, Allied Heroes, Nazi Thieves, and the Greatest Treasure Hunt in History by Robert Edsel. And it tells the story of an Allied group whose mission was to save pieces of art and culturally important items before Hitler could destroy them during World War II.
Hey, dude, that sounds fascinating. Let's hear a little bit of that trailer.
You want to get into the war?
Monuments, man.
Time to put a team together and do our best to protect buildings, bridges, and art before the Nazis destroy everything.
How many men?
Six.
Jesus.
Well, with you at seven.
That's much better.
So you want to go into a war zone with some architects and artists and tell our boys what they can and cannot blow up.
That's right.
Aren't we a little old for that?
Yes. We go through basic and then we wait for orders.
Basic?
A little help.
Basic training. Oh, boy.
Destroy an entire generation of people's culture. It's as if they never existed.
We got company.
Frank, we gotta go!
That's what Hitler wants. And it's the one thing we can't allow.
So we get to shoot some Nazis?
It's your responsibility now.
I've never shot at anyone before.
He really wanted it all.
Better get it back.
What have you got? I seem to have stepped on a landmine.
Why would you do something like that?
What do you got?
Lieutenant here seems to have found himself on top of an unexploded mine.
Why would you do that?
You all been spending too much time together.
Well, the film is going to be out on December 18th, and it could really win Best Picture, which would be a second one for Clooney since last year he won the same award.
You know, another one that I heard about the trailer for this. I have not watched it yet, but I'm going to watch it today, is The Wolf of Wall Street, the new film by Martin Scorsese. And that one's Paramount, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a biographical dark comedy based on Jordan Belfort's memoir of the same name. And it stars Leonardo DiCaprio, Jonah Hill, and Matthew McConaughey.
What a cast.
That's what I was thinking, too. Yeah.
I know. I watched the preview, and I'm already totally intrigued. The story revolves around a young New York stockbroker who refuses to cooperate in a large securities and fraud case involving corruption on Wall Street.
Well, obviously, this is a false story because they all...
Yeah. There is no corruption on Wall Street.
Yeah, obviously fantasy.
Yeah.
You know what? I saw the trailer for this film, too. We have got to hear a little bit of this because the dialogue's great.
My name is Jordan Belfort. The year I turned 26, I made $49 million, which really pissed me off because it was three shy of $1 million a week.
We're making a name for ourselves.
Nobody knows if the stock is going to go up, down, sideways, or in circles. You know what a fugazi is? Yeah.
Fugazi, it's a fake.
Hey, Fugazi, Fugazi, it's a wazzy, it's a woozy, it's a fairy dust.
Was all this legal? Absolutely not. We were making more money than we knew what to do with.
We don't work for you, man.
You have my money taped to your boobs. Technically, you do work for me.
What's wrong, Daddy? But watch it, you
bring it home. Oh, my God. FBI, any kind of booze you might want.
No, the Bureau forbids us from drinking.
Duh. So follow me, you're good, about to go. I'm doing 500, I'm out of control. But there's nowhere to go, and there's no way to slow. If I knew what I knew in the past, I would have been like that on your.
How does this actually work?
There's a big money sign.
They get launched at the target, they stick.
Yeah. This is their gift, okay? They're built to be thrown like a lawn dart.
One, two, three!
Stop. Okay? Safety first.
Safety obviously. Is safety is got first. It. We don't want to get a bad reputation.
That was amazing. I'll tell you, when it comes to the Oscars these days, if Scorsese has a big film coming out, it's a pretty safe bet that he'll be there.
Yeah, you know, and DiCaprio's inclusion is always a big bonus for critics.
Oh, they do love him.
Yeah, as well as the casting of McConaughey.
He's a very good actor. Matthew McConaughey, he's better than people think he is.
Yeah, you know, and he's one of those actors that's a huge draw, but doesn't really get a whole lot of, like, Oscar consideration. So I'm really looking forward, you know, looking forward to seeing him with DiCaprio in a Scorsese flick.
Yeah, it's definitely going to bolster the film's prestige, for sure. And the biggest Oscar pull will probably be like the film's controversial Wall Street subject matter. It continues to be a huge topic of debate.
It does, doesn't it, Christy?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so another film that is worth looking at is 12 Years a Slave. It's the newest film by video artist turned film director Steve McQueen. And the film features a ridiculous amount of A-list stars, like too many to even list, but includes...
I'll list some of them.
You list some
yeah.
of them.
Michael Fassbender, Cumberbatch, Brad Pitt, Paul Dano, he's in it. And there's a bunch more, too. But those are the ones I can think of off the top of my head.
Yeah, it's really interesting. The film is based on the autobiography 12 Years a Slave by Solomon Northrup, which it chronicles his experiences after being kidnapped and sold into slavery in 1841.
And you know that we published that book.
Did we?
Oh.
Fantastic. Yeah, they just released the trailer for that, I think, recently, didn't they?
Yeah, let's watch.
Yeah, let's watch and listen.
And listen.
I want to ask you what part of the country you come from.
I originate from Canada. I guess where that is.
Well, I know where Canada is. I've been there myself.
Well, travel for a slave.
Solomon Northup is an expert player on the violin.
I was born a free man, lived with my family in New York.
Be good for your mother.
Until the day I was deceived.
To Solomon.
Kidnapped, sold into slavery.
Well, boy, how you feel now?
My name is Solomon Northup. I'm a free man.
And you have no right whatsoever to detain me.
You're no free man. You're nothing but a Georgia runaway.
Went down to the river Jordan.
And that servant
that don't obey his Lord
shall be beaten with many stripes.
That's scripture.
The condition of your laborers, it's all wrong.
And my property.
You say that with pride.
I say it as fact.
Speak!
Man does how he pleases with his property.
You come here.
Master Atlas.
I say come here!
Days ago, I was with my family in my home. Now you tell me all is lost.
If you want to survive, do and say as little as possible.
My soul arising.
Well, I don't want to survive. I want to live.
I thought you knowed something.
I did as instructed. There's something wrong. It's wrong with the instruction.
Master brought you here to work. Any more, I'll earn you 100 lashes.
I know what it like to be the object of Master's lashes.
No!
In his own time, good Lord will manage them all.
I will survive! I will not fall into despair! I will keep myself hardy till freedom is opportune!
If I was a free man, I'm not a slave.
I I mean, that is an awesome trailer. And McQueen also, didn't he do, I think he did Hunger in 2009 and Shame. That was the one with Michael Fassbender. I was trying to think of a while ago. Mm-hmm. The one where he was very, very racy. And because of that, I have a pretty strong suspicion it's going to get a lot of recognition at the Academy this year.
Well, yeah, both won like a mountain of awards. Yeah. So I think it's a good sign that...
I see here that the studio was apparently so pleased with this film that they moved up the date, which is always a good sign because they think it's worth an Oscar buzz.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Another film, the last one that I wanted to point out, which I think has definite Oscar buzz potential here, is Saving Mr. Banks. It's a biographical drama film that tells the story of Mary Poppins author P.L. Travers and her 2-week visit to Los Angeles, where Walt Disney himself attempted to get the screen rights to her famous novel. It stars Emma Thompson as Travers and Tom Hanks as Walt Disney.
Wow. Oh, yeah. And it's also got Paul Giamatti, Jason Schwartzman, Colin Farrell. I read about this. It looks really, really interesting because I read a book not too long ago about Walt Disney. Was huge. It was a gigantic book. And that was his, I think that was his first attempt to go live action, was Mary Poppins. And he really, really, really wanted that book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, let's give the listeners a clip of it.
Yeah, let's hear a little
Here we go, yeah.
Winds in the east. Mist coming in. Like something is brewing. About to begin.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are beginning our descent into Los Angeles.
Welcome, Mrs. P.L. Travers, to the City of Angels.
It smells like...
jasmine.
Chlorine. And sweat.
Introducing the creator of our beloved Mary.
Poppins. Never, ever just Mary. Now, where is Mr. Disney?
She's here.
Well, Pamela Travers. You can't imagine how excited I am to finally meet you.
Would you mind? My name is Mrs. Travers, Mr. Disney.
Oh, Walt. Now, you got to call me Walt. 20 years ago, I made a promise to my daughters that I would make your Mary Poppins fly off the pages of your books. I promised them, Pam.
I know what he's going to do to her. She'll be cavorting and twinkling.
He can't make the film unless you grant the rights.
Damn.
Ideas.
What kind of ideas?
Constables responsible. Now, how does that sound?
No. Responsible is not a word.
We made it up.
Well, unmake it up.
She won't approve Dick Van Dyke.
No.
The latest house doesn't look like that. No,
it's all wrong.
It's all wrong?
Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious!
Stop! Mary Poppins is not for sale. I won't have her turned into one of your silly cartoons.
Says the woman who sent a flying nanny with a talking umbrella to save the children.
You think Mary Poppins has come to save the children? Oh, dear.
Mr. Travers, what am I missing here? I'm wondering what I have to do to make you happy. You know, you've never been to Disneyland, and that's the happiest place on earth.
No, please.
Well, when does anybody get to go to Disneyland with Walt Disney himself?
There he is.
Where did she come from?
Mary Poppins and the Bankses. They're family to me.
Mary Poppins was a real person? So it's not the children she comes to save. It's their father. It's your father.
You don't know what she means to me.
I won't disappoint you. I swear, every time a person walks into a movie house, they will rejoice. Don't you want to finish the story? The boys have come up with an idea. I think it's going to make you happy.
You didn't bring me all the way here to tell me that.
Oh, no. I had a wager. I couldn't get you on a ride. I just won $20.
Yeah!
So those are my picks for the 4 films right now that seem like they might be worth paying attention to for the Oscars.
You know what? I don't know where Maya came up with this list and stuff like that for the movies. And there's sometimes I would just stick into things and I want to know something, but I don't know where to go to find out. Where can I go?
Well, I know where to go. I go to Jerry Renfro.
That's right. Jerry Renfro, the guy in the know. If you want to know, I know. So here you go. Here's something that's been on my mind recently, and so I decided to do some research. You may have heard about the term patent troll. It's kind of entered the lexicon recently. So in case you don't know, what a patent troll is this. Somebody invents something, like Eli Whitney invents the cotton gin, and he patents it. And that protects him from other people ripping him off by making copies and making money off it. So what's happened recently, especially in America, is that people are putting patents on software. Now, it makes sense with something like the Windows operating system or Microsoft Office. It's just, you know, really complex and a lot of working parts. But people are patenting ridiculously vague things like a program that organizes recipes. So then if any other program anywhere could be used to organize recipes, they get lawyers and they sue the people that are doing it. And so, like, in New Zealand now, they've actually made it so you can't patent software because it's becoming such a problem. There's so much money being wasted by, you know, people and lawyers. And a lot of these startups will just settle because they don't have the money to go to court forever. So it's basically like legalized extortion. And it got me to thinking about patents. And I decided to wonder what are some of the most ridiculous things that have ever been patented. So I found a few that I think you'll find pretty interesting. The first is, this is one of my favorites, is there is actually somebody patented how to use a swing. You know, like on a swing set? In 1881, Stephen Olson filed a patent with the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office for the correct manner in which to mount and swing on a swing set. So any of you 3 or 4 year olds out there using the swing set, be careful. Lawyers may come knocking.
Yeah, pay some royalties, kid.
That's right. You owe us. I would suggest that you don't ever try to invent a device that allows you to high-five with nobody else there. A guy created a high-five machine that has a fake arm that simulates the high-five action. So
that's incredible.
It is, and it's patented, so don't even think of doing it.
It's like the Quicken's Loan commercial.
Yeah, yeah, bye-bye. Exactly. High-five, exactly.
That must be for really lonely people who don't have anyone in their life.
Do you know the high five was only invented in 1972? It's only been around that long. At least as the far as the earliest recorded high five we know of was in 1972.
It was the last thing Nixon did before he got
No, it
office.
Was actually Johnny Bench and another player. He had his hand up and the other guy didn't know what he was doing, and so he just slapped it, and thus the high five was born. Okay, next one. The gerbil shirt. I kid you not, it's a vest that has little plastic boxes and tubes that allows you to go for a walk and have your gerbil take a walk around the inside of your vest.
Oh, my God.
So if you were thinking about that one, just don't waste your time. It's already patented. This one's a little crazy.
These are like all like as seen on
this
TV
one's a little crazy and the gerbil one
wasn't. Yeah, the gerbil shirt seems normal compared to this next one. Plumber chic pants. Now, you all know what plumber crack is, you know, referred to when your pants don't cover all the way and a little bit is exposed.
Yeah, actually, I've seen it on you.
Yeah.
Don't tell me.
Oh, no.
Did you patent that, Jerry?
He just flipped me off. You mean that finger that I just gave to Maya? Yes, I patented that. The whole tagline for this product is, don't be embarrassed by that plumber crack. Show it off with a series of pants with different shapes cut out right at the top of the butt crack. Oh, are you Irish? God. Get the one with a shamrock. Have a new love? Choose the heart symbol.
Oh my gosh.
For you me, know what? I have seen that.
Have you really?
Yeah,
I see. Some that. Of these products have just been patented and not actually made. So this one actually I think was made because I found pictures of the product. However, to go along with Nancy Reagan, I just say no to crack.
No, but the butt crack thing, you know, plumber's butt crack thing, I saw that. And what it was an advertisement for these T-shirts, right?
Uh-huh.
And it's for like if you don't have a plumber's crack or whatever, right? You can wear this shirt. It makes you
and
look
makes
like
it
you
look like you have
you tuck it in.
God. Yeah.
It's amazing.
Oh, my gosh.
The last thing, this is hilarious. There was a guy who patented a dog toy that is made of a wood or wood-like substance 12 to 16 inches in length with small things jutting off of the side.
Okay.
The stick. He patented a stick. It looks like a stick. It's a fake.
You know what?
Stick.
I have seen that.
Have you really?
They're like all over Ashland.
Yeah, like the trees, they just drop them everywhere. So that guy is probably going to sue every forest in the world before the day is over.
Well, they better do it quick because ours are burning down.
Yeah, really.
So there you have it. And now you know. And I'm Jerry Renfro.
And that's your art and entertainment news. Keep listening for Downpour's special feature. Kellerman's African-influenced album has his flute singing a joyous tune. He talked about this and more with the president of Just Imagine It, Inc., Charlie Stanton.
Love that guy. Hey, welcome everybody to another exciting interview on Get Behind Me, Not Stay There. Today, from Johannesburg, South Africa, we have Walter Kellerman. Walter, how are you?
I'm excellent, thank you. And you?
Well, not as good as you, but I'm doing okay.
Thank you. It's pretty exciting times here at the moment. We've got the Nelson Mandela Sports and Culture Day on Saturday.
Oh, yeah?
There's going to be 80,000 people in the stadium.
Are you going to be one of them?
I'm performing.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So that's pretty exciting. And they've asked me to do a flute solo that I wrote for Mandela. So 80,000 and a television audience will listen to 5 minutes of only flute.
Wow, that sounds great. Now, I've watched you do a couple on the videos, a couple of those huge, like this World Cup. Oh my gosh, how do you do it without getting either super excited or super nervous?
Yeah, no, I'm very excited. I mean, this is going to be probably a career highlight because... to do a flute solo for 80,000 people, I don't know if it ever happened before. You know, I think the organizers are very brave to put that up, you know, because normally the people want to party and they want some vibey, rhythmic partying music. So I'm very excited and a bit worried about how they're going to respond to it.
Well, I'm sure they're going to respond very, very enthusiastically. Your music is beautiful.
Thank you. Yeah, so this is really exciting. So we just did a sound check tonight, and it's quite interesting because it's such a slapback, you know, so many delays. I mean, when you stand there in the and it's such a big place, you know, so it's quite challenging to perform like that.
So let's talk a little bit about your new album.
Yeah, it's an African-influenced album, and I've collaborated with some different African artists, and the African influences are very close to my heart because when I was little, my parents only played classical music at home, but what they didn't know is when my mom went off to work, the lady who looked after me played only African music all day long. So from a very young age, I've been influenced with strong African influence.
And what was the recording process like for you this time around? I know you've done a few other albums before. Was this any different for you?
I co-produced mainly with J.B. Arthur, who's a South African-based amazing producer, very successful producer, and a beautiful sense, both a aesthetic and a technical sense. We sort of collaborated and worked together and arranged the songs and just took quite a long time to record it, you know. It took us a while, and the album sort of slowly took up the format we were looking for. And but it's normally a really long, exhausting process for me to record an album because I'm very fussy, and it's easy not to be happy with something, you know. So, and then because I want to be happy so that in the end I can be really proud of it. And, you know, it's a tough process, but a very fulfilling one.
Do you have a favorite piece on the album, a favorite song?
My favorite piece is probably Sylvia, which is a song that I wrote with a South African bass player and singer, Fresh Makgene. And we wrote that song it's in the memory of lost loved ones. So, you know, he was thinking of his aunt. I was thinking of my dad, who we've lost. The words of the song is in Tswana, and it says, I'm wondering who you're sitting with. I'm wondering where you are at the moment. And he sings beautifully fresh, and I play the alto flute. And so that song is really close to my heart.
You know, I heard the song many times. It's a wonderful song. And it's even, you know, if this is impossible, even more, you get more enthralled with this when you watch the video, to see you guys perform it. I want to tell our listening audience, you can see it on YouTube. And if you go to Walter Kellerman, and if you just, or if you just type in Sylvia, you will find it on YouTube. And, of course, on your site, walterkellerman.net and .com.
It's on the front page of the site. And there's also a video tab with some more videos on there.
Wonderful. Now, everyone can also pick up a copy and make a purchase at that time. Now, last year, South Africa was really brought to the attention in the United States by, they had a movie about Rodriguez. I'm sure you've heard of him.
Yes. I grew up with his music.
That's what I was going to ask you. You're from South Africa. We only heard, you know, saw the movie and, you know, heard the incredible story. Was that an influence on you at all?
Well, you know, that was the Rodriguez was really a super hit, and you know, he was a star in South Africa, and we all listened to his music. You know, I think he influenced all of us. But you know, at that stage when he was making his music, I was playing mostly classical music, so it didn't really influence my playing. But obviously, I only started making my own music about 6-7 years ago. And before that, I was playing classical music, but listening very widely. And, you know, when you start making your own music, all the music that you've listened to over the years will somehow find its way into the new music that you're creating. So I'm sure there's a little element of Rodriguez in my music as well.
Now that you're writing your own music, do you find it like more liberating that you're not playing someone else's piece, or are you frustrated with coming up with material, or is that an issue with you?
I find that if I write the piece myself, it normally sits easier on the flute. You know, because I'm sort of playing and writing at the same time, and it's really comfortable, sits comfortably on the flute. And so I usually find it much easier to play the music that I've written myself. But it is a bit of a process to come up with something that sort of makes sense and that that works, you know. So on my albums, I have, you know, I write some of the music, and then there are so many other tunes and melodies that I love that I don't really see the point of doing a whole album of only my own music. You know, I do want to include other people's music as well.
I know a lot of people just want, you know, then they record. Musicians will often, like, you know, I'm only going to do my material. But
yeah,
it's an interesting take that, you know, and it makes for a good diversity on your album.
Yeah, I sort of, you know, some melodies just work and they're just absolutely beautiful. And I often find that in traditional melodies that are so deceptively simple, but they just somehow touch your heart and sort of reach through the ages to really affect you. And so many of my, quite a few of my songs are actually old traditional melodies.
You know, I was going to ask you, when you... when I hear your music and we're listening to it, you know, you get a definite, you know, a feel for it. It's like almost like a, sometimes it's very uplifting. And sometimes it's almost like, you know, spiritual. And I'm wondering, when you guys are playing on stage, does it affect you like that? I mean, when you have to play, like you play something and you're like, it's a very moving piece. It's very spiritual. And it's like very, you know, yeah, you get drawn into yourself and your thoughts when you're listening to the music. And then, you know, the next number is going to be like, you know, something up tempo. Does that affect you at all?
No, not really. It's such a natural thing for me. And I mean, I do it every day where I change between the energies of the songs. So it's quite a natural process for me, and I just sort of am in the moment as I play it, and it's sort of a natural transformation from the one song and one energy to the next energy. I do try to make music with good energy, because you know that's sort of in me somehow, and I like to make the flute sound have a wholesome sound and something that you can't define, but that speaks to your heart. You know, that's what I'm focusing on when I'm playing and writing.
You know, I was just thinking about that. Speaks to you or your heart, because the way you play the flute is just, it's so fascinating and so soothing, and it just, you know, it's all encompassing. Yeah. When you were giving that explanation, I was reminded of an interview I heard with John Lennon, where they asked him how he rated himself on the guitar. And he said that he thought he was okay, he was fine. And then they compared him to a couple other, you know, guitars, you know, famous people like Eric Clapton. And he said, and if I'm hearing you right, it was kind of like what you're saying. He said, I prefer myself, because when I play, I don't even have to sing. The instrument is going to tell the story for you.
Yes, that's exactly how I feel. You know, I do feel that the instrument will do the communication. And that's how I... sort of my driving force is to communicate with the colors of the flute, and I just feel so blessed to be playing the flute every day. You know, it's actually a sort of a meditative state that you go into when you play, and the music has different layers. There's sort of a top layer that's quite accessible, but if you listen deeper, there are hidden layers behind the top layers, and there's always a little bit more to discover. That's sort of how I try and create the music.
Well, you're having a profound effect on all of us here. When are you coming back to the U.S.?
I'll be there in October. There's a big South African Day in L.A. organized by the South African Department of Arts and Culture, and they've asked me to be part of that day. And at the moment, we're trying to... I think that's the weekend of the 4th to the 6th of October. But now, at the moment, my manager is in New York. He's trying to... create a few other days around those dates so that we can come and perform and find places to perform in some other cities as well.
Well, we can't wait to have you back. So where is all your music available? Is it available, like, is it exclusively on your websites, or is there other places where people can get this?
Yes, it's available on iTunes, and the new album Mzanzi will be available on the 10th of September, also on iTunes and on CD Baby in the States, and on most other digital platforms.
Wonderful. And then your website is walterkellerman.net, and that's walterkellerman.net. And then is there also one.com or just the...
Yeah, it's basically the same one.
Everyone can follow you on Facebook and Twitter as well?
Yeah, I'm on Facebook, Twitter, and you can... On Facebook, I've got my personal Facebook page and the fan page. Both of you are very welcome to come and chat and tell me what you think of the music.
Wonderful. And be sure to watch the video, Sylvia, on YouTube. You really, really will enjoy it.
Yeah.
All right, Walter, I want to thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy evening. It's evening over there in South Africa to chat with us tonight.
Yeah, thank you so much. I really enjoyed it.
To learn more about Walter Kellerman, visit us on our website at justimagineinc.com.
Ricky Kesh has found commercial success around the world. He talked about his new album, Shanti Orchestra, with our New York correspondent, Chrissy McIntyre, in this interview.
Welcome to Get Behind Me, Now Stay There. I'm Chrissy McIntyre, and I'm speaking with international music sensation, Ricky Kesh. Ricky, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
Absolutely. So when I say international, I'm not kidding. You really get around. You're in New York, I understand, for this weekend. What brings you here?
Generally work because I've got two new albums which I'm currently promoting in the USA.
Wow.
So I'm traveling around. I'm in New York this weekend, then I'm going to be in Los Angeles for the next. And I'm sort of going to move my way around USA and try to promote the album with as many people as I can. So that's the idea for this trip.
Okay, so you have two albums.
Yes.
Wow. Let's talk about your music for a second. How do you characterize your music? I know you're in the lounge category. How do you describe it?
My music is quite eclectic in the sense that I love fusing different genres of music.
Okay.
So I would say that since I'm Indian, my music has got a predominantly Indian influence.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, since I travel a lot, I have a lot of Celtic influences in my music, a lot of African influences, a lot of Western electronica influences. So it's sort of like, you know, everything mixed with each other, melded. So what I try to do is that I try to make, get a song that I'm sort of hearing in my head, and I try to create that song rather than trying to create a genre itself.
Okay. Yeah, I know what you mean about the different influences. I was listening, for instance, there was this one song you have, Exotic Dreams. It's really cool. It has, it's like Indian music, but it has bagpipes in there. It's really, really clever.
Yeah, true. Because when I was in France earlier this year, I heard this band which just consisted of four bagpipe players, and then you know, that's when I thought that, you know, I need to incorporate this sound because the kind of scales that they were using, the kind of tonalities they were using, worked really, really well with Indian music.
Yeah.
So then that's when I just incorporated it into the song, and it just worked beautifully.
Yeah, really beautifully. I really liked it. It's sort of like, it sounds like the soundtrack to my life. Like, as I'm doing, like, if I'm doing anything and I'm listening to that music, it's like it sounds like a great soundtrack for what I'm working on.
That's really nice to hear.
But you had an interesting start. You studied to be a dentist? Where did that come
from? That was weird because in India, how it works is that Indian parents always feel that a valid profession, you know, either being a doctor or a dentist or an engineer or a PhD or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And my father's also a third generation doctor. I come from a family of doctors. So I was forced to get into the field. So it was sort of like a deal that my parents and me had that, you know, I could do music for the rest of my life if I just finished off my DDS degree.
Okay.
So I did the degree, I gave the degree certificate to them, and then I got into music full time.
Here's what you wanted, and I'm out of here.
Yes, exactly. I did what you wanted. Now, you know, now let me do what I want.
Now I get to do what I want. And so you started writing jingles for commercials. Is that right?
Yes, actually, I started off when I was in high school. I started playing for a couple of bands.
Okay.
And so the regular rock bands and stuff like that. And I toured all over my country playing music. And then that's when I wanted to start taking music seriously as a profession. And one jingle led on to the next, and it led on to the next, and they started getting really popular. And then I started off doing probably one jingle a month, and now I'm up to doing about one or two a day. So that's the kind of workload that I'm handling at my studio.
So you're still writing jingles? You haven't given that up then?
No, definitely not, because jingles is something that I will never give up. One is obviously for the financial aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
But another reason why jingles is a great thing to work on is that each jingle usually takes about a day to complete.
Yeah.
And during that day, you meet a new creative professional, you work on a new genre of music. Like, for example, today I get to work on a Celtic folk jingle, tomorrow I get to work on let's say, a dubstep jingle, the next day I get to work on a rap jingle.
Wow.
So, you know, you're on your toes the whole time, and it's almost like a workout where, like, you know, where you're, it's almost like how you would go to a gym for a workout, and the more you work out, the more better you get at it.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing with composing for jingles. The more you work on jingles, the more better you get at it, and it's like, you know, working with different creative professionals every single day, showing them your music, having creative discussions with them. So, I mean, it's a great working experience doing jingles.
Yeah, and then all of that experience then just feeds into your own music.
Exactly.
So how many albums do you have? You said you had two albums at the moment. Why?
Yes.
How do you, Why didn't you just put it on one album? I guess I don't understand. How did you have two, or did they come out different times, or are they just different sounds? Yeah,
they're sort of different sounding, as in there were two distinct sounds that I wanted to work with. One was a sort of like a ballad, like one album is called Ballad of Maya. Mm-hmm. So Maya in Hindi, that is the Indian language, it means illusion.
Okay.
So that particular album is more song based, but very world music. So it's more lyrical based. It's got songs which talk about different aspects of life. It talks about love. It talks about separation. It talks about despair. It talks about anxiety. Different aspects of everybody's life, mm-hmm. but in a very ballad form. And again, very very world music. So that was Ballad of Maya, and Shanti Orchestra is the album from which you heard the track Exotic Dream.
Right.
So that particular album is very instrumental. It's again, it's very eclectic. It's not just Indian influences. It's influences from all over the world. Yeah. And again, I guess answering your question, both the albums were two completely different sounds that I wanted to work with, and somehow they just ended up getting finished together. So that's why it's being released together.
Excellent. And you were a featured artist on iTunes, is that right?
Yeah, that was something that came as a surprise to me, and it was a very, very pleasant surprise that I was a featured artist on iTunes in the USA and in New Zealand and Australia, and apparently next week it's going to be in a couple of more countries.
Wow.
So iTunes has been really supportive of my music, and that's something that's very, very nice of them.
Yeah. So you're in New York now, and then you're going to Los Angeles, and then
right.
So are you... Do you do like gigs or concerts?
At present, I'm not doing concerts of my music because right now, I mean, that I've just finished recording the album, so I have to put together a complete ensemble because doing this kind of music live is very difficult.
I would imagine.
Simply because most of the musicians are from across the world and most of them are one-time collaborations just for this particular album. But I'm in the process of figuring out a way to actually get musicians together to sort of duplicate the music in the album so that we can actually take this music live.
So you said you're musicians from all around the world. I noticed that on your track list, you have a guy from South Africa, a guy from India. How do you find all these members for your albums?
I think for this, the internet has been extremely helpful. So, I mean, networking on the internet, using the regular tools that everybody uses, like, you know, social networking and also word of mouth. Whenever I travel, I try to go for as many concerts as possible. And that's where, you know, the usual thing of like, you know, me waiting backstage and waiting to meet the musician and talking to them, exchanging business cards and, you know, figuring out a way to work with each other. So that's the way that most of these collaborations work. And I've been very fortunate on Shanti Orchestra. I got to work with a singer from the Congo, from Africa.
Wow.
And and he was a brilliant singer, actually. And then I got to work with another lady, Alexis from Qatar, that is from the Middle East. And Walter Kellerman, who's a very, very well-known flute player from South Africa. So that way it worked out really well. And in Ballad of Maya, one musician who I'd like to point out, who I was fortunate to work with, was Ustad Sultan Khan. He's an Indian-based musician. Mm-hmm. He's played with the Beatles. He's played with George Harrison for his solo projects. He's played with Madonna. He's played with Duran Duran. Basically, he's an Indian classical musician, and he's played his Indian classical instruments with these particular famous musicians worldwide. And he was also a close associate of Ravi Shankar, who's the Grammy Award winner for Lifetime Achievement this year.
Wow, what an honor to work with him.
And I was really honored to work with him. I mean, he passed away. Unfortunately, he passed away last year. And his recording on Ballad of Maya is his last recording and his last ever to be released recording. So I was very fortunate to get a chance to work with him and, you know, and have the responsibility to actually release his last ever recording.
Wow. What kind of concerts do you go to when you're out and about trying to find musicians? What kind of music do you listen to?
My primary interest in music would denote, I try to go for world music concerts, wherever I would find an instrument that, you know, I would normally not find on television or normally not find on radio. Mm-hmm. So if I find something interesting that way, like, for example, if I would see a listing of a concert of a tabla player with an electric guitar player, I would definitely want to go for that concert because that would make an interesting sound.
Right.
Or let's say a dizu player, like let's say any kind of like an oriental instrument with a Western instrument, like with a drummer or a singer from South Africa with, let's say, a flute player from Ireland. I mean, that if I ever find these kind of unique collaborative efforts, like, you know, or any kind of listing which has got these kind of collaborative efforts, I would love to go for any of these concerts. And that's what I try to do.
Well, and you're bringing that in your music as well. So they're going to see you and you're going to see them.
Exactly. And so that's the whole point, because New Age music as a genre is sort of like, you know, more about textures and sound rather than, you know, rather than any melodic influences nowadays. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so that's so with this album with Shanti Orchestra, I tried my best to, you know, bring in a very, very strong musician influence, like, you know, by getting musicians together and getting them to jam and getting them to come up with unique, what do you call that, sitar lines or unique flute lines and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So that it becomes a little more melodic and a little more immersive as a musical genre.
So when do you go ahead and write the songs yourself, or do they kind of emerge as you're in the studio with the band?
So how it works is that I usually come up with the structure of the entire song, including the composition. So that's entirely written by me. Mm-hmm. And then what happens is that I usually do not go plan to a musician, because when I work with a musician, let's say Walter Kellerman, who's a South African flute player who played on Shanti Orchestra, mm-hmm. when I work with him, I want to get a little bit of him into the album rather than, you know, just get a musician to behave like a stenographer and just, you know, play the notes that I dictate to them.
Right,
so
right.
I give them a rough framework of what I want to do. I usually play that on the keyboard, or I show a recording of them, playing it on the keyboard, and I show them the rough notes that I would like them to touch upon. Mm-hmm. And then after that, you know, then they sort of, you know, they probably the first two or three takes is, you know, exactly the way that I want them to play.
Right.
And then after that, you know, it starts moving towards, you know, getting a little more personality, I mean, a little more of their personality into the playing style. And then it sort of becomes their own. And the reason why I love doing this and like getting a little bit of the musician into the music is that if you try to do everything yourself, then, you know, you're limited to your knowledge of music.
Mm-hmm.
So I would like to, you know, get a complete lateral perspective to my composition or to my music, and get something completely, and I would like the musician to completely surprise me and almost get me scared to use what they provide me with, because I would like the music to be a lot more vital in that way.
Yeah, it's you never know what's going to happen then, which is great.
Exactly, exactly.
It's the whole creative process right there. Well, listen, we wish you all the best. And I
yeah.
just wanted to thank you so much for chatting with us. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
To learn more about Ricky Kej, visit us on our website at justimagineinc.com.
Unseen, a New York Times bestseller. Bill Black is a scary guy, a tall ex-con who rides to work on a Harley and trails an air of violence wherever he goes. In Macon, Georgia, Bill has caught the eye of a wiry little drug dealer and his cunning girlfriend. They think Bill might be a useful ally. What they don't know is, Bill is a Georgia Bureau of Investigations agent named Will Trent. Or that he is fighting his own demons, undercover and cut off from the support of Sarah Linton, the woman he loves, who he dares not tell he is putting himself at such risk. In a novel of fierce intensity, shifting allegiances, and shocking twists, two investigations collide around a conspiracy on both sides of the law. Karen Slaughter's latest is both an electrifying thriller and a piercing study of human nature. What happens when good people face the unseen evil in their lives?
Macon, Georgia. 7 days ago, the day of the raid. Dawn turned the morning light a cobalt blue as the raid van roared down a gravel road. There were 10 cops in back, 5 on one side, 5 on the other, all jammed shoulder to shoulder so that every bump of the tires made them jerk in unison. The radio speakers were blaring Ice-T's Cop Killer. The air inside the van vibrated with the raging beat. Cop Killer. Better you than me. Lena Adams steadied her shotgun as they hit another rut in the road. She checked the Glock strapped to her thigh, made sure the Velcro held the gun tightly in place. The voice in her head screamed along with Ice-T's as they got closer to the target. She took a few quick breaths. Not to clear her mind, but to make it spin. To amp up the adrenaline and the absolute high that came from knowing she was a few moments away from the biggest bust of her career. And then, everything stopped. The music snapped off. The red light came on over their heads. Silence. 2 minutes until arrival. The van slowed. Gravel crunched under the tires. Guns were drawn, magazines checked. Helmets and protective glasses were adjusted. The smell of testosterone got thicker. 9 men and 1 woman. All of them suited in Kevlar vests and black fatigues. Loaded up with enough ammo to take down a small army. Lena breathed through her mouth, tasting the fear and excitement circling inside the van. She took in her team, eyes wide, pupils the size of dimes. The anticipation was almost sexual. She could feel the exhilaration building around her, the way everyone shifted in their seats, gripped their guns tighter in their hands. They'd been staking out the house for the last 2 weeks, had planned their attack even as the junkies and whores streamed in and out like ants on a mound. There would be piles of money. Percocet, Vicodin, hillbilly heroin, coke, guns. Lots of guns.
The twisted plot and shocking reveals remind readers why Slaughter remains a dominant voice in crime fiction. The Publishers Weekly. Karen Slaughter is the New York Times and number one internationally best-selling author of over a dozen thrillers, including Fallen, Broken, Undone, Fractured, Beyond Reach, Triptych, and Faithless. A longtime resident of Atlanta, Georgia, she splits her time between the kitchen and the living room. For more information about top-selling titles from this award-winning company, go to downpour.com.
Me Now Stay There is a Just Imagine It Inc. presentation and was recorded in the Blackstone Audio Inc. studios in Ashland, Oregon. If you would like more information about this show, or if you or someone you know would like to be featured, please call 541-708-0525 or visit justimagineitinc.com. I'm Chrissy McIntyre.
I'm Sarah Simerson.
I'm Jerry Renfro.
I'm Maya Seligman.
And I'm Charlie Stanton, and we like you, so be sure to like us on Facebook. And remember to get behind me.
Now stay there.